Perspectives on Easter, a 1010 Thrive special.
I was born into a wealthy family in central Italy. We were members of the Roman Equestrian Order, which was a social class of wealthy landowners and businessmen. My father was a successful politician and senator. He taught me everything I needed to know about politics. I began my political career as a local magistrate in Pisa, where I was responsible for maintaining law and order, collecting taxes, and overseeing various aspects of local administration. I presided over legal cases, managed disputes between individuals and groups, and enforced Roman laws and regulations. I was also involved in various infrastructure projects, building roads, aqueducts, and public buildings. I even played a role in organizing festivals, public events, and other cultural activities. I served briefly as an officer in the Praetorian Guard, a special unit of elite soldiers that protected the Roman emperor and his family. I was chosen for my loyalty and military expertise. Soon thereafter, I was given military command in various parts of the Roman Empire. Tiberius appointed me to be prefect of Judea in the 12th year of his reign. Judea was a troubled province filled with religious zealots and insurgents who were constantly rebelling against Roman rule. I clashed often with the locals over issues related to religious practices and taxes. It did not take long for me to realize that I needed to be firm and decisive if I wanted to keep the peace. Unfortunately, my efforts were often met with resistance and hostility. Long before he came into my judgment room, I had heard about Jesus, a religious leader and a miracle worker who had gained a large following. I knew that he had irritated the Jewish authorities and that they were looking for ways to get rid of him. I had dealt with insurrectionists in the past. Anyone who was a threat to Rome needed to be dealt with harshly. However, it seemed to me that Jesus was less of a threat to the empire and more of a threat to religious leaders. I got word early on Friday morning of Passover week that Jesus had been arrested and was being tried by the Sanhedrin, the Jewish council. Not long thereafter, the Jewish authorities brought Jesus to me and asked me to sentence him to death, but I could find no fault in him. When I learned that Jesus was from Galilee, I sent him to Herod Antipas, the ruler of Galilee, who was in Jerusalem for the Passover festival. I figured that he could be Herod's problem. But after he questioned Jesus, Herod sent him back to me. I examined Jesus more closely as he stood before me for the second time. He had dark, long hair and a beard. He wore a simple robe. He was bloodied and bruised, and his robe was ripped from all the beatings he had suffered. And yet, as he returned my gaze, there was no fear in his eyes, and oddly, there appeared to be no resentment. I asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" Jesus responded, "My kingdom is not of this world. If it were, my servants would fight to prevent my arrest by the Jews. But now my kingdom is from another place." I was intrigued, so I pressed him, "So are you a king?" Jesus did not hesitate. "You are right in saying that I'm a king. In fact, for this reason, I was born. And for this, I came into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of truth listens to me." "Truth?" I wondered out loud. "What is truth?" Jesus did not respond. And for a moment, we just looked at each other. Then I left the room and went to speak with Caiaphas, Annas, and some of the other Jewish leaders who had accused Jesus of treason and blasphemy. I told them that I could find no fault in him and that I intended to release him. But the leaders insisted that he must be crucified because he has claimed to be the Son of God. I knew that Jesus was being railroaded, and it was out of self-interest that the chief priests had handed him over to me. My wife pleaded with me not to have anything to do with him, and she had been troubled about him in a dream. So despite the pleadings of the religious authorities, I looked for a way to release Jesus and still keep the peace. I decided I would offer the mob a choice: the release of Jesus or the release of Barabbas, a well-known criminal who had been in prison for an insurrection in the city, and also for murder. I had Jesus flogged once again and dragged him out to the balcony. I wanted him to look more sympathetic. Then I addressed the crowd. People of Jerusalem, I give you a choice. On this Passover, tradition allows me to release one prisoner to you. Which do you wish? Barabbas, a thief and a murderer, or Jesus called the Christ? Almost immediately, the crowd started chanting, Barabbas, Barabbas. I was surprised at the crowd's insistence that the criminal be set free instead of Jesus. I told the crowd that the charges against Jesus were baseless and appealed to the crowd three times to choose sensibly. But with loud shouts, they insistently demanded that the Nazarene be crucified. They were so riled up that I feared that they might storm the Praetorium. And so I told the crowd, I cannot free this Jesus. He has done nothing to deserve death. But tradition is tradition. You make me release Barabbas? Very well. I motioned to one of my servants to bring me a basin of water, and I washed my hands. I turned back to the mob and told them, I wash my hands of this just man's blood. May it be on your own heads. Then I ordered that Barabbas be released and Jesus be handed over to be scourged and crucified. I also directed one of the centurions to have a sign made for Jesus' cross that read, Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. This sign was written in three languages, Hebrew, Latin, and Greek, so that all who passed by could understand the message. Some odd thing happened after that. The sky turned dark for 3 hours, from noon until 3 p.m., which is the entire time that Jesus was on the cross. At the time of his death, there was a violent earthquake that shook the ground and split rocks. I also learned that the curtain in the Jerusalem temple that separated the Holy of Holies from the rest of the temple was torn in two. As soon as Jesus died, Joseph of Arimathea, a member of the Sanhedrin, asked me for the body of Jesus in order to bury him, and I granted the request. The man had Jesus buried in his own tomb. Not long after, Caiaphas and some of the other Jewish authorities came to me and asked me to secure the tomb so that Jesus' followers could not steal his body and claim that he had risen from the dead. They said to me, Sir, we remember how that impostor said, while he was still alive, after 3 days I will rise. Therefore, order the tomb to be made secure until the third day, lest his disciples go and steal him away and tell the people he has risen from the dead. And the last fraud will be worse than the first. I granted their request and ordered soldiers to guard the tomb and seal it. After Jesus' crucifixion, my wife was beside herself. She was distraught. She was incensed. She was disconsolate. I had never seen her like that. I pride myself on being cold and composed. However, I too became somewhat anxious, knowing that I had condemned an innocent man and wondering whether his incredible claims could be true. When I heard the reports of Jesus' resurrection, I was even more concerned.
Crucify! Crucify him!
Why do you seek the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen.
I am the way, and the truth, and the life.
Now I live a life full of regret. In this matter with Jesus, I ignored my conscience, disregarded the good advice of my wife, and chose political expediency over public rectitude. Truth? What indeed is truth?